Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Compared to a lot of Ohio and the rest of the country, Columbus and Central Ohio look pretty good economically. Below average unemployment rate and a robust housing market, but the Columbus City schools are not part of that equation. They are underperforming and have been hit with scandals over the grade tampering and attendance record scrubbing. Last week, the 25-member Education Commission Mayor Michael Coleman appointed in December unanimously approved several recommendations intended to get the schools back on track. Joining us now to discuss these recommendations is the director of the Columbus Education Commission, Eric Fingerhut. He is a former chancellor of the Ohio Board of Regents, former state senator, and he is currently vice president for education and STEM learning at the Battelle Memorial Institute. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anne. It's great to be here.
Also with us is a co-chair of the commission, Judge Algernon Marbley. He is a U.S. District Judge for the Southern District of Ohio. Welcome to the show, Judge.
Thank you. Happy to join you.
Listeners, if you have a question or comment about the commission, what do you think about the recommendations? That's what we're talking about today, the recommendations that came out on Friday, unanimously approved by the 25-member commission, by the way. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Check out our Facebook page, too, and post your question or comment there. The panel's name, I just keep calling it the Columbus Education Commission, but it was Reimagine Columbus.
Well, actually, the name of the panel was the Columbus Education Commission. We had a website called reimaginecolumbuseducation.org, which people can go see, go to that website, and they'll see the draft recommendations that we're discussing here today.
So is it really a reimagination? Is there anything really specially new that we hadn't thought of before?
I don't know that there's anything especially new that we hadn't thought of before. I think that we have a circumstance where there are a number of stakeholders who are now all aligned to improve the educational outcomes of the kids in Columbus City schools. And so what the mayor did, I believe, was quite creative in bringing all those stakeholders together, giving us a mandate, giving us someone who understood education at a granular level, like Eric, to be the executive director. And so maybe it was an attempt to solve old intractable problems, but in a new and innovative way. That's what I believe we have here.
I would also add that that the reimagined part, I think, is that we've been here before in this community, right? Many of the issues identified by the commission have been the subject of previous commissions and previous reports. In fact, in the report itself, we talk about a 1968 report that was done by an advisory committee at Ohio State and a 1998 report that was done by the business community, the Chamber of Commerce, in concert with the school board. And remarkably, many of the recommendations that we make today are similar. So the reimagined part had to come by asking ourselves, how do we actually do today what we have failed to do in the past? And so that's why you saw so much discussion about what we could call implementation, right? What do we have to change? If the way we're organizing education in this community today is not getting the job done, what do we have to do to organize ourselves as a community so that we're all aligned, as the judge says, so that we all hold each other responsible and accountable, so that we have appropriate checks and balances that keep this moving forward in the right way, so this just doesn't become another report that sits on the shelf. And I think that you'll find that that part of the report is the most innovative, creative. I don't think there's another model exactly like what we've proposed. The actual solutions that that new system needs to implement, as the judge says, are frankly things that we've known work and we just have failed to implement.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Columbus Education Commission recommendations. Came out on Friday. They were unanimously approved by the 25-member commission. Joining me now in the studio to talk about it, Eric Fingerhut. He's director of the Columbus Education Commission. And Judge Algernon Marbley, U.S. District Judge for the Southern District of Ohio. He was a co-chair of the Columbus Education Commission. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It sounds like when you say reimagine Columbus, it sounds like it's about the city and not the schools.
Well,
why that? Why not reimagine Columbus schools?
Well, I would say it is about the city and not the schools, because what the mayor and the council president were saying, and they're the two leaders who called us together, is that this city as successful as it is, cannot reach its full potential unless we have an education system that is lifting up all of our children and enabling them to participate in the future that we're creating for this community. And we're actually creating extraordinarily high-quality jobs in this community at a faster rate than any other city in the state, for sure, and many other cities and many other major cities in the country. But the problem is that we have a whole group of our young people who are not going to be able to participate in that economic growth because they don't have the skills and the education level necessary to do so. And at some point, that becomes a barrier for the city's future growth. And we were clear also, Anne, that this is about all the children who live in the Columbus City School Districts, not just those that go to the traditional school district schools. So, for example, 15,000 children in the Columbus City School District go to charter schools, community schools, and other thousands go to, you know, use vouchers in private schools. So there's quite a large number of children in our community who need high-quality education, not just those who are in the Columbus City schools.
I would add that any successful city has an effective education system. And unless and until there's an alignment with all of the relevant sectors, Eric was correct, we cannot reach our full potential as a city. So I think that that was a recognition by both the mayor and Council President Ginther in formulating this commission.
The problems with the state report cards and just the performance problems at the building level, that's been going on for years and years and years. I've been here for 24 years. It's just been a chronic problem. It's only been recently in the last year that we've had this grade-changing, attendance-scrubbing scandal, individually. How much of an impetus was that? It's a bad thing to think about that happening, but on the other hand, you wonder how much it spurred some action.
It may well have been the straw that broke the camel's back. It certainly was a tipping point for us, and I believe that alerted everyone to the need to take some significant affirmative acts to correct the problem. We had a school system that was at the time in some distress, and I think that many of the recommendations that we've made will address some of those issues, but it's an ongoing concern. You know, recommendations in and of themselves, will not cure all that ails our city schools. And it's the problems that we've identified are endemic to all public school systems. We might have some to a greater degree than others and to a less degree than others, but I think that we have an ongoing concern, and it's something that we have to address on a continuous basis.
And the other thing I might add to your question is correct in that these problems have existed. But one of the things I was surprised by when I took on this this challenge that the mayor and the council president gave me was the extent to which the community didn't really understand the extent of the issues and challenges that face our schools. For example, there are 26 categories on the state report card for a school district. We meet 4 out of the 26, none of them relative to elementary school age children. The state has a measure of what we call value added, which is, does every child learn at least a year's worth of material in a year's worth time? And many school districts, the successful ones, are learning much more than a year. They're surging ahead with these kids, and on average, we're learning less than a year's worth of material. So a child that starts school already, often unfortunately, 4 out of 10 of them are already behind because of a lack of preschool, which the report addresses, and then they fall farther behind. So I think when people got to really pull back from the high-level, reports they see and get into the guts of it. Certainly the members of the commission, I think, were somewhat surprised by the extent of the challenges, and that made the work ahead of us even more serious.
Some schools work in the district. They're blue ribbon schools or whatever. Why not just replicate those? What did you learn about the barriers to just replication?
You know, the real key to our effective schools is school leadership and teachers. We have some great teachers. We have teachers who are out. We have principals who are outstanding school leaders. And we have to determine what those principals do and what those teachers do to make them effective and attempt to replicate it. A lot of that has to do with human resources. We have to have more leaders. We have to have more teachers. We have to have more parental involvement such that we'll be able to replicate what happens at COS or Fort Hays and some of our other, at the Metro School, some of our other outstanding public schools. But make no mistake about it, it has to do with leadership in the building.
Well, and I just, again, I think we have to state the facts. And this is what I was referring to earlier, that when we actually, you know, got into the guts of the data, frankly, it was somewhat shocking. So you're quite right, Ann, that there are some high-performing schools in the district. The total number of A schools, schools that get an A on the state report card, is 5 out of 117. About 20% or less of the students in the Columbus City School Districts are attending a school that has been rated A or B. So while there are some, there's not anywhere near enough. And frankly, just replicating those to the extent possible is absolutely one of the commission's recommendations. And as you know, the mayor, we've recommended creating a new public-private venture, a new public-private partnership that would have an innovation fund in part to be used to help do that. But that alone cannot solve the challenge. And so the judge's point about getting effective school-level leaders and giving them the authority and the accountability to fix their schools, and frankly getting a superintendent who has specific expertise in turning around these low-performing schools becomes such an important priority for the community.
And then there's always the bean counters. The mayor, city council president, school board president, city auditor, and county probate judge, by one recommendation, would appoint an independent auditor to monitor the school. Why that combination? First of all, we only have about a minute before we have to take a break. So first of all, why an independent auditor? What about the current system is not trustworthy?
Well, the fact that we recommended an independent auditor does not mean that the system is not trustworthy. It means that there are certain data and metrics that have to be met that we need to assure are properly met. And quite frankly, some of the things that have happened that has put the school system in the position that it's in, where it's being investigated by both the state and the federal government, mm-hmm. Led us to, I think led the mayor to recommend and us to recommend that there is an independent auditor who can determine whether we are meeting the pedagogical standards mandated by the state and who can also determine whether our books are accurately reflecting, you know, the balance sheet. So we need to do both. And much of that was spurned by our current state of affairs.
And if I could, I know you have to go to break, but if I could just add that when we were looking for solutions, how to build a new educational leadership structure, as I mentioned before, how to reimagine, how do we hold ourselves accountable? How do we get aligned? How do we have checks and balances? We looked at what works in Columbus. And, you know, the city of Columbus has an independent auditor, and it is credited by everybody, outside observers and the mayor and the council themselves.
Hugh Dorian.
Right, with helping keep the city a well-managed and transparent organization. And so it's a solution that's worked for our city, which is about the same size, budget, and scope as the school district. School district does not have that check and balance. And it seemed to us that given that it's worked so well in Columbus, that the citizens of Columbus understand it and support it, it would be a good innovation to bring to our schools as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. My guests are Judge Algernon Marbley and also Eric Fingerhut. Eric Fingerhut's the director of the Columbus Education Commission. Judge Marbley is co-chair of the Columbus Education Commission. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the question over Syria. Chemical weapons use has been charged the red line, but uncertain. Should the U.S. intervene? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 here on 89.7 NPR News. 57 degrees with cloudy skies will reach a high near 67 today. Partly cloudy tonight, dropping down to a low of 52, and then sunshine and a high of 77 on Tuesday. Support comes from Homeport Nobo on Long Condominiums, offering homeownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring a diverse community with a mix of historic and newly built homes and condos. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the Columbus Education Commission. Maybe you've heard. They've put forth a bunch of recommendations. All of them were approved unanimously by the 25-member commission. In the studio with me today, Eric Fingerhut, the director of the commission. Eric is also vice president of for education and STEM learning at the Battelle Memorial Institute. Been working kind of double duty lately. And also Judge Algernon Marbley, U.S. District Judge for the Southern District of Ohio. If you want, you can go to our web, our All Sides Facebook page and post your question or comment there. It's kind of a little bit quicker. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Patty in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome, Patty.
Hi. I have great concerns over this new group being a nonprofit, which greatly affects the ability to have open records and open meetings. And when you look at the problems with Jobs Ohio and the people that have complained that that's not open, here we are. Kasich started it and did it, gave a bad example, and now here's the Dems turning around and following suit and using that bad example. And with the idea of this, and I'm rather appalled that Judge Marbley's a part of this.
Well, let's
affects his integrity of him as a judge and the integrity of the group, and why is he part of something that would help not have open records? And
okay, well, Patty,
let's
hang on a second, Patty. Let's talk about that. I think Patty's referring to the $50 million or $35 to $50 million innovation fund. There's also $100 million that's been put forth in terms of just to get the $1 million, you've spent about $350,000 of that so far for the commission. What about open records? Because of that $35 to $50 million innovation fund, not all of it's going to be coming from public coffers. Will there be access and open records to how that money's spent?
The answer is yes, absolutely. And we said so in the report. We're certainly aware of the concern that the caller expressed about other examples of public-private partnerships. And so the commission specifically addressed that in its report, calling to make sure that all of the meetings would be open. And I think we set a good example. Certainly Judge Marbley is chair of the Columbus Education Commission, as one of the co-chairs, set a good example. Every meeting, we didn't have to be open, but every meeting was open. They were streamed live on the web. We had websites and Twitter feeds and everything to make sure it was as accessible as possible, public open meetings. And that model, which is the example set by our co-chairs and by the mayor and the council president, is absolutely the model that this would follow. And, of course, any public funds that would come to the Innovation Fund would have to go through the
what
proper—
What about private
would
funds,
have to,
though?
Let me just finish this comment. Mm-hmm. Would have to come from through all the public processes. So the school board would have to vote and determine what its contribution would be. The city council would vote and determine what its contribution would be. And absolutely all private funds will be transparently reported, as they were to the Columbus Education Commission. You mentioned that. And we've, of course, don't under no obligation, but have, in fact, reported publicly every single dollar that has been spent and where it came from.
You know, you say you're under no obligation, but you have. So what happens when somebody decides, well, we're not under no obligation, we're not going to do it anymore? Is there anything to stop somebody or some organization or some group of people in the future going forward from deciding, nah, we're not going
to
do it.
The unique thing about this as opposed to Jobs Ohio is that it's operating in the education space. It involves our children. And just as Columbus City Schools are subject to the Open Records Act, I think the intent of the commission, as Eric so aptly pointed out, was to be transparent. All of our meetings were transparent. All of our records, our recommendations are on our website. They're transparent. And so we have maintained all along that we would be open and transparent so that all of the stakeholders would understand the steps that we're taking, including parents and students. And I would only say to Patty that we believe in a fundamental level in open records. I'm also a trustee at The Ohio State University, and so I'm well-versed in the education space and open records. So I do believe in it, and I hope that that will restore some confidence in her and others who have questions about transparency.
Thanks a lot, Patty, for that great question. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. The recommendation says, one of the recommendations says, in light of the knowledge of district finances and performance measures that will reside in the independent auditor, the Columbus Board of Education should seek the advice and support of the independent auditor in order to place a levy on the ballot. And I wondered, well, what role will the auditor play, the independent auditor play, then, in getting the levy on the ballot?
Well, actually, the recommendation, of course, these are all recommendations, mm-hmm. right? There are many steps yet to go.
Right.
So we can't speak of them as if they actually—
are going to happen.
Well, they're going to happen, but we can't speak of them as if they are in place. But the recommendation is that the—I'm hopeful they're going to happen. The recommendation is that there would be no change in the legal authority of the school board relative to levies. It will remain their authority, the authority of the elected board of education, to place a levy on the ballot. However, just as the mayor and the city council have to seek the advice and support of Mr. Dorian, the city auditor, before they put bond issues and such on the ballot, they can still do it. It's their authority. So should the school board seek that advice and support. And frankly, the voters then would get to weigh the auditor's response in their decision as to whether or not they were to support the levy.
Okay, so that would all be public record, and people could look at both sides of the argument if they didn't agree.
It's an extra piece of information for the public to consider as they are making their decisions.
The commission states an ambitious goal that all schools in Columbus, charter or district, or those that take vouchers, I would assume, earn an A or a B rating by 2025. It sounds like the future. It sounds like science fiction, but it's really only 12 years away. Is that really ambitious? And what will an A or B even mean by then? What do we know what we're talking about in 12 years?
Well, those are evolving standards in terms of what an A or B will mean in 12 years, but I can assure you this. There were some commissioners who thought that 12 years was too far out. We want results now. The future is now. The problems are intractable ones that are present now. And so, you know, what happens in the interim? So this incentivizes us to understand that we don't have time to delay. There's no just cause for delay. We have to begin to implement these changes immediately. We need leadership in the building immediately. We need teacher evaluations so that we can have expert teachers in our classrooms immediately, because the kids are the ones who suffer as we delay. And so we have to improve. We have to improve, and that has to be an ongoing process, and it has to be uppermost on our minds as the new superintendent comes in to reset our goals, as principals enter their school buildings in the fall to reset goals. So they have to know the fierce urgency of now, I think, is the expression.
Well, and the report also says it calls for progress in each school every year. So we know we can't get to A or B tomorrow in every school, especially schools that have been persistently performing at a failing level. But we need to see progress right away. And actually, we know from examples around the country that such progress is possible when a superintendent brings in the right building leaders and gives them the authority and the responsibility to build their staff and to make the decisions relative to academic success at the school level.
An interesting recommendation to me: create a common electronic record that would follow students from grade to grade and school to school. One of the biggest problems that urban school districts have is transients, you know, the turnover of schools. And they're not just going from school to school in a district. They may go out of the district for 6 months, come back in. How fast do you think the district can achieve a goal like that?
So I actually think this is very doable very quickly. And it's one of the reasons why this is the Columbus Education Commission and not just the Columbus City Schools Commission, because a solution like this is a community-wide challenge and requires a community-wide solution. Because as you point out, this isn't just about moving within schools within the school district. This is moving within districts. This is moving from a charter school to a district school and back and back and forth. We heard from experts all over the country. The technology to do this exists. It should be implemented. And the report calls for the creation of a new governmental, like an ESC, Educational Service Center kind of organization that will manage the technology, not only for the Columbus City School Districts, but make themselves available for other schools that wish to join that technological umbrella. And I'll add one other thing. Mm-hmm. This isn't just even about schools. This is about things like libraries and neighborhood centers and boys and girls clubs and all of the various entities, the YMCA, all the entities in this town that do important educational, augmenting the educational experience of the school day, they also need, with appropriate privacy concerns, to know what should they be working on with the kid, right? Where is their progress? Where are their target areas that they need extra help with? When a child goes to the homework helper center at the library, rather than them guessing at where the child is, they should be able to know exactly what information is needed, and then the teacher should know what progress was gained at the homework helper center. So this technology solution, the digital layer, the digital backpack, we call it, in the report, is doable. It's being done across the country, and it will materially help student achievement.
Something to that effect was created over the course of about 20 years with child support enforcement to make sure that the different states could communicate with each other when it came to child support enforcement. It took years and years and years. Are you saying that it's already in place now? We already know where to go to get this kind of a system?
Yes, there are excellent models for this, and we will draw on those experts. The challenge is getting an organization in place in the community that has that as their responsibility, their mission, and they're held accountable for performance.
As of early April, the commission has spent $360 of the $1 million budget. Are you expecting more money? What are you shooting for in terms of an end game here? Falling within your budget of $1 million, what's the timeline?
Well, actually, I think that was a report we gave that was through March.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We will have expended most of the $1 million on the report and the commission's work and the experts. All of it will be publicly reported, as it has been, and to date. And actually, there have been additional items. For example, you know that the commission asked the school board to collaborate with us in the development of a operations management review of the non-academic, the non-instructional components. And we just had a very generous contribution of $200,000 from the Columbus Foundation. I'd like to thank them on your show, if I could, for making that item possible that was not even part of the original budget. The extraordinary support of the city of Columbus and of the generosity of the private sector, including the foundations and the corporate community, has enabled us to do this work.
How many of them? I know we've kind of just scratched the surface in a way, but how much of it requires legislation at the state or local level yet to implement it?
So there are three items that require action by the state legislature.
Okay.
The first is the independent auditor that we discussed. Now, I just want to be clear that the state legislature with the governor, this would be legislation, so the governor would have to also support it, needs to create the opportunity for that office to exist. But then that will be subject to a referendum of the voters. So the final decision as to whether or not that office is created, the independent auditor, will be by the voters.
Okay.
Secondly, with respect to the innovation fund, the support of charter schools that would come from that innovation fund, we cannot use – it's inappropriate, it's illegal to use any district funds that come from a levy for charter schools unless the voters approve specifically such a levy. In order to get authority to ask the voters for such a levy, we have to ask the state legislature. You may be familiar. That's what Cleveland asked for and received that authority. They then put such a levy in front of the voters, mm-hmm. and the voters approved it in Cleveland. Thirdly, in order to raise the quality of charter schools, because we haven't talked about it on this show, but we have the same problem with charter schools that we have with public schools, right, which is some are terrific, high-performing, like, for example, the Kip Journey Academy that Judge Marbley is on the board of, or the Columbus Collegiate Academy, high performers.
But there tends to be an illusion that charters must be better.
We have the same percentage of low-performing charter schools that we have of district schools. In order to raise the quality, we suggest that in Columbus we do as other cities have done, and that is to give the mayor and the city authority to be the school sponsor. That would give them sort of the good housekeeping seal of approval, high-level, you know, standards. They do not have that authority today. And we ask the General Assembly and the governor to grant the mayor that authority.
That would be having the city take on a lot of...
Well, as it happens, the actual functions can
luggage.
Be... luggage, I guess. I probably shouldn't have jumped until you finished the question. It's not that much more work because the functions of sponsorship can be handled by appropriately skilled organizations. But the decision to put their name on a school absolutely would say this is of a quality and standard that we want in the city. And by definition, therefore, those that do not have that imprimatur should be viewed likewise.
And what that does, and it allows the city to attract other high-performing charter schools to give parents and students that alternative. One of the recommendations we made was for the mayor to appoint a director of educational improvement, and that person's function would be to look at bringing in, among other things, look at bringing in high-performing charter schools. So this initiative would give the mayor and the city the option and the power, if you will, to improve in that respect.
One of the criticisms of the whole voucher system, the way with the money, the vouchers going to private schools, the charter system, and so forth, is they don't play by the same rule book. They don't have to take in kids who have lots of struggles in certain areas that are very expensive and difficult to cope with. They don't have to take in the same kids that the public schools do.
So, first of all, understand that we don't control the law of evolving, you know, vouchers and charter schools.
But
right.
Doing this doesn't change that problem.
But I mean, that's a function of state law. But all charter schools are public schools. They are open to every child that seeks to go. If they're oversubscribed, then there's a lottery to determine who is admitted. And we have very good data compiled by many credible organizations, including KidsOhio.org. Which is one of the organizations that supported the work of this commission with terrific research and professional guidance, that shows that actually the population, the student population of the charter schools in Columbus mirrors almost exactly the student population in the Columbus City School District. And that's certainly true of the Kip Journey Academy, which Judge Marbley is so familiar with.
We can't turn down. That's a myth. We can't turn down students because we don't want them, because there might have been a discipline problem at other schools. So as public
schools,
we have
the same. And if they become a discipline problem, you have to keep them and work with them.
And we have to work with them the same way that any other public school will work with those kids. We welcome that opportunity at the Kip School, and I know that the other high-performing charter schools don't engage in creaming. That was the argument that the high-performing mm-hmm. charter schools would take the best students, and that's turned out not to be the case.
By the way, I'd like to also add that you know, there's a myth that the high-performing district schools, the lottery schools in the district, are creaming, and that's also not the case. For example, Fort Hays, I don't know if you saw the event with Arnie Duncan, Secretary Duncan, mm-hmm. and Mayor Coleman and Mark Reel, my good friend and colleague pointed out that the poverty level of the children attending Fort Hays is over 70%, and it's an A-rated school. So we're hardly creaming by giving parents greater choices, but it does give them an opportunity to find the right school for their child.
Well, we're out of time with Eric Fingerhut and Judge Marbley, but I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and hopefully we can catch up as things progress in the future.
We'd like that very much.
Thank you very much, Ann.
That's Judge Algernon Marbley, U.S. District Judge for the Southern District of Ohio. He's co-chair of the Columbus Education Commission, and also with us, Eric Fingerhut, director of the Columbus Education Commission. We'll continue the conversation after this. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
A few years ago, I was planning on killing myself in my garage, and now I'm doing the best thing I've ever done in my life in that same garage.
That's comic Marc Maron in a scene from his new TV series, Maron, talking about the popular podcast he records in his garage. Maron also has a new memoir. Maron talks about fights, apologies, dysfunction, and comedy on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in just about 20 minutes. It starts at noon here on 89.7 NPR News. Cloudy skies for today with a slight chance of rain and a high of 67. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 52 degrees. Mostly sunny with a high of 77 on Tuesday and more sunshine with a high near 80 looking ahead to Wednesday. Thank you to everyone who pledged their support during our spring membership drive. If you missed the chance to give, just visit WOSU.org. Thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News. Program support is provided by the Arts College Prep Academy. ACPA is now enrolling high school students looking for a safe and vigorous learning environment for all. More information about ACPA can be found online at artcollegeprep.org. And support for 89.7 comes from the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, presenting America Fiera, the 2013 Keyholder event on May 9th at the Ohio Theater. Tickets and more information online at womensfundcentralohio.org. All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. As the Columbus Education Commission met over the past several months, some were concerned that their recommendations might pave the way for a city takeover of the school district. The Columbus Education Commission's recommendations don't entail that action, but a recent proposed amendment to the state budget could open the door. Joining us now is Sam Gresham. He's a government consultant, a former executive director of Common Cause Ohio and the Columbus Urban League. He is a frequent political commentator on Columbus on the Record as well on WOSU television. Sam, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, and I really appreciate it.
So, first of all, what were your concerns at the outset, and how and what and have they and how have they been allayed?
Our concerns were that this commission would make recommendations for the takeover of the Columbus Public School. Our coalition, NoSchoolTakeover.com, is supporting the idea of no takeover. We want the citizens of Columbus to be able to directly elect the school board members like they do every other governmental elected official in Franklin County.
Are you concerned at all about the involvement in appointing or hiring an independent auditor?
There's two pieces of language in there, auditors, as they've drafted. They've given the auditor subpoena power, and they've also said seek the advice and support. I don't think if you have a duly elected school board member, that should be the body that makes that decision. That would be the only thing I would say about it. Other than that, the proposals that they have put together, we are in support of. We believe in the same things they believe in and improving Columbus Public Schools. And a lot of it, like myself, have put 34 years of effort into improving the Columbus Public School. So we support their proposal as it is right now.
We are talking about the Columbus Education Commission proposals. They were unanimously agreed upon by the commission last Friday. What do you think about the proposals? Give us a call and tell us if there's something you're particularly excited about, anything you're concerned about, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You like all the proposals as they stand. Anything feel pie in the sky or anything in your mind where you're thinking, been there, done that, it's just not going to work, love the idea of it? Overall, what do you make of it?
I've sat on several so-called blue ribbon panels to write reports like that. The difficult part is implementation. And if you look at the life of a typical student in the Columbus Public Schools, there are three parts of that life. And school is only one third of that life. The other part is in the community and in the family. Now, how do you integrate all those things into the educational process and where it makes it success? At the Urban League, we were successful with students that the public schools were not successful with. We recovered them. We helped them grow. Kids who were in the Columbus Public Schools, we provided supplemental and enrichment activities. So from the standpoint of understanding, particularly the African-American population, we have a breadth of knowledge on how to do that. Now, I say, remember, there are three parts. The school is only one part. The community is the second part. And the family is the final part.
And we're always talking about the family, and that's the most critical part.
That's right. That is the most critical. If you look at the success of kids, the supplemental enrichment experiences that they have can make them very successful. And those kids who do not have that are not going to be as successful. You know, being ready by third grade, being ready by kindergarten to go into school, having reading scales, all of those things are important, because if those kids are not ready, the greatest indicator, though, that most people don't know, that will tell you to predict the success of that child is the academic success of the mother. And if that mother has a master's or a bachelor's degree and is involved in the educational process, there's a high probability. But if that mother doesn't, then you have to find a way of supplementing. When we were at the League, we had a thing called the Parents Information Resource Center, which was designed to help parents find ways to get involved. So it's possible.
614-292-8513. Don't wait. We have about 9 minutes to go. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, as did Thomas. He says, having taught in Columbus Public Schools in the 70s, I am once again amazed at the conversation and the formation of another commission to find a solution to the failure of the system. You can throw all the money in the world and have commission after commission, but until you address the real problem, which is in the home, the problem will continue. There are plenty of good teachers and even administrators in the system, but there is only so much an institution can do to revalue education in home environments. So it's not simply a question of a mom who has a bachelor's or a master's degree. It's more profound than that. It's whether the mom can read herself.
Right. But if they have that academic success themselves, it's usually transplanted.
And conversely, if they have the academic failure.
Right. You have the same problem, but there are ways to dealing with that. You can offer supplemental enrichment activities. And what we've learned, regardless of the level of educational attainment, regardless of the level of attitude about education, if you work with that family and you bring them into the educational process and you use the community as the educational setting, you have a higher probabilities. I mean, there are all sorts of systems, 40 characteristics of success. I can go down and name them all because I've been to the training on them all. But I know those thirds. If you get that mom, or if not a mom, a grandpa, grandma mm-hmm. involved, and you put that inside the context of their community, then we have a higher chance of being successful with that student. And I've seen it work a gazillion times.
Academic achievement in the parent's life is absolutely no indicator of their desire for their child to achieve. There was a program in New York City, and I think it's still there, where they actually, if you were identified as a parent who was not functionally literate, not reading at a grade level that's appropriate, you had to start taking literacy courses. You had to start going back to school with your kid.
We did that too.
And if you wanted your kid to be in this school, you had to achieve along with them.
In some of our programs, we required parents to do that too. And we required them to participate in the educational process of their kid, of actually being in that classroom and supporting that. So you're right. There are a variety of techniques. But again, I talk about the thirds. Mm-hmm. If you don't hit all the thirds, you're not going to, the probability you're going to be academically successful. You got to do those things. And what people sometimes forget is those kids come in the classroom with a set of understandings. And what you have to do is work with those understandings and build off of that. They have a knowledge base. They have reference points. And it's not like you walking in the class and you're going to pour a pure crystal into their head and all of a sudden they're going to learn. We don't think that's the proper approach. You build off what these kids know. And go from there. But the person who wrote the email is correct. There have been several efforts, but I applaud them again. Any effort that's going to move forward to improve public schools in the city, I'm for. Now, whether I agree with everything they put in those reports,
you ever agreed with everything?
No.
What about the fund that? $35 to $50 million innovation fund. We had a caller earlier who's very concerned that there won't be open records to this. We won't know where the money's going. We won't know where it's coming from necessarily, outside of what comes from the public, if there is a levy for it. Are you concerned about transparency when it comes to this whole thing?
The No School Takeover Coalition hasn't taken a position, but I'll give you Sam Gresham's position, okay?
Okay.
Transparency is very important. And the expansions of charter school at the peril of public schools scares me. Public schools has a significant underfunded for the problem that they really have to address. Taking away any of those funds, as it was stated, charter schools are no panacea. They don't have all the results. Some of them have been miserable failure. There seems to be something in the heads of people that says if it's non-public school and it has its whole money, it's gonna be better. The history hasn't proved that that's correct. So, yes, we want transparency.
Doug in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Yeah, I just echo everything Mr. Gresham's saying, and I'm a elementary school PTA president speaking for myself, but you know, people are concerned about just keeping what we have, you know, that we keep our music teachers, keep our phys ed teachers, keep a professional teaching class or whatever, that they don't break the union contracts and, you know, then try to pay them half as much or whatever, and that the charters are a big issue, the funding, you know, aspect of it. And then all the testing, the kids, the punishing the schools over testing, it's just out of control. It narrows the curriculum.
Well, that,
and it incentivizes teaching to the test.
Well, I brought that up earlier as far as every school is going to be an A or a B school in 12 years. And I wondered, you know, what does that even mean now, let alone 12 years from now?
It's utopian. All these plans, you know, they ship all our jobs overseas, and then they say, well, why do the kids not want to study?
Thank you. Yeah. A little utopia is not bad. A little utopian
it's
thinking.
It's called a vision.
Vision, okay. Jesse in Columbus, you're on the air with Sam Gresham. Welcome, Jesse.
Hi. Speaking of utopias, I would like to address the issue of poverty. I think that right now that people keep saying family. When the real issue is poverty, which is something that we're not addressing and something that was not addressed in presidential debates or the elections, really. And I'd also like to point out that what ends up happening to a lot of these students that are affected by poverty is that they get fed into the prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, we've got indentured servitude for a lot of our population.
Jesse, I wholeheartedly agree with you. It is about poverty, and if we don't understand poverty as a part of the educational process, we'll never solve it. 72% of the kids in the Columbus public schools have free and reduced lunch. That means a large part of that community comes from a poverty situation. And Ms. Fisher talked about an issue, which is mobility. Kids move constantly based on domestic and income situations. We have to find a way to capture that and harness that. So poverty is a major part. There is an attitude in poverty that when I was at the league, we constantly had to deal with. And that was a give up attitude. So when you have that poverty, you really have to overcome that.
Yeah, the transportation or the transience issue, even if you're tracking where the kids are going, even if they stay within the district and you can tell where, that moving around, going from classroom to classroom with a young child is extremely disruptive. So all the tracking in the world, what difference does it make if they're still moving around?
If you don't deal with the issues of poverty, it won't make much difference at all. And remember the number, 72%.
Jesse, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jesse.
All right. So is there anything missing from the recommendations? Is there anything that you didn't see in there that you think they're...
You know who the poorest performing student is in the Columbus Public School?
No.
An Appalachian male. The poorest performing student.
Okay.
Has the highest dropout rate, has the lowest academic rate. Now, if you look at the range of that, that's all about poverty. And the question that I would like to have seen, I'd like to see more social workers. I'd like to see more academic counselors. I'd like to see programs that integrate the family into the educational center. I'd like to see the community's schools become community centers where parents can go to programming and activity, and people can see the schools differently than they see the schools now as an asset. The question of poverty is the strongest. If you have social workers in the school and they're constantly working with parents, and their families, and their early warning systems or systems to know what's going on with that child, the academic possibilities are going to exponentially increase. Our work has clearly indicated that when we were at the Urban League, we had people who served in those roles, who worked with families to identify what was going on. If the kid comes to school hungry, the kids come to school with domestic issues, if the kid comes to school with violence as a part of his life, his academic success is being reduced automatically.
Real quick email from Mike. He says, we have seen a growth in drug abuse. Why don't we have a report card for the court system and start charter court systems? The difference is that education has become more about politics than it is about education. Until we deal with societal issues, we won't move forward in any agency. That was a lot to chew on right there, but I think the drug issue is a big problem. And yeah. It's not just the urban schools by far. But because of the poverty, there's less resources to grapple with it.
You know what baffles me? When I say public schools, there's an automatic negative connotation. And how has that occurred? It has been built up over years and years of denigration through media. And what they've said is the public schools don't work. Well, historically, public schools work. People who come out of public schools do great things.
Most people still come out of public schools.
All poor people will always come out of public schools. So there's not an alternative to get rid of public schools. But there is, and there has been since 1930, an overall effort to control our schools and get the schools to do what certain corporate entities want them to do. And high-stakes testing is a result of that. That came from the Business Roundtable and Alex, groups who said, we need to measure these kids. We need to know what they need to do. And the question becomes, as the teacher indicated, it comes out, we're studying for the test. We're not studying for academic success because the test has become the total measure of whether that school will continue, whether that teacher will keep her job, whether the principal will keep his job, whether the school board will still be there. Nobody's saying, what about this child? Do they have the ability to do critical thinking? Can they problem solve? I mean, can they do all those things?
Lots of questions. We don't have all the answers yet, but I hope you'll join us again, Sam, to talk
about
it.
Anytime.
Thanks to the All Side staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producers Corinne Gleckler, Rachel Quimby, production assistants Kiram Shaban and Leticia Wiggins, and with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.